You are listening to CKMS News on 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo. Today is June 25th, 2023, and I am Dan Keller, delivering today's headlines. Massive housing development on former Schneider's meat plant property nears approval. United Healthcare protest outside St. Mary's General Hospital. Changes on the way to development bylaws in response to new provincial legislation. First up, massive housing development on former Schneider's meat plant property nears approval. After more than an hour of presentations from developers and staff at a June 19th committee meeting, the City of Kitchener seems prepared to make a decision on the housing development on the old Schneider's meat plant property as early as next council meeting on Monday, June 26th. At this meeting, the project developers presented many of the changes they had made to the plan after community engagement and feedback from city staff, including adding 140 three-bedroom dwellings for families and having 135 units, less than 5% of the total, rented out at 20% below market rates for 25 years, a rate the developers have deemed affordable. The new plans also call for the addition of another tower, bringing the total to 13 towers, with 3,345 dwellings planned. The developers are also promising $850,000 towards a shovel-ready affordable housing project being developed by the Working Center. Joe Mancini of the Working Center called the money a big deal for the $17 to $19 million 97 Victoria Street project that they are working on. He said it will push us over the top, unquote. The money being given to the Working Center project is being counted by the developers as part of their commitment to affordable housing on the Schneider's project. At the meeting, staff recommended approval of the project and several councillors were enthusiastic about this long-awaited proposal, though there was some pushback. Councillor Debbie Chapman put out ideas on reducing traffic impact of the existing nearby residents, while Councillor Jason Deneau asked about the reduction of townhome-style housing that earlier plans included, referring to aging residents being connected to the ground. Chapman was instructed to discuss the issues with staff, who said they support what the proposal shows, while Chris Pidgeon of GSP Group and Jamie Crutch from Auburn Developments gave the following response to Deneau.
So in the original plan brought forward, it talked about 7 stacked townhouses, and now we're down to 1. I'm just curious why the reduction in the townhouses, in the stacked townhouses.
Yeah, so as market conditions have changed, and the Auburn Development is an apartment builder predominantly, Jamie does not have any stacked townhouses in his portfolio.
And I'm just trying to wrap my head around why, I guess it was 7 before and now it's only 1. When, if you're not in the development of stacked townhouses, why include that in the beginning? And the only reason I ask is because we have an aging population. And, you know, as our people, as our residents age, they necessarily don't want to have to go into apartment buildings because they're used to having space. They're used to having a backyard. And so if we provide townhouses for them as opposed to forcing them up top into an apartment building, that still gives them a sense probably greater to the community than it would be forced up high. And that's the only reason I'm asking this question, is because I think we need to focus on continuing to have some of our elders and our seniors connected more down to the ground than up, because you know social isolation, you know, it can happen very quickly with some of our seniors.
Mr. Pidgeon, or perhaps even Jamie through you, if you want to outline the accessibility of your units and the buildings thereof, and additionally the fact that you guys are building a number of 3-bedroom units as well, perhaps that can go to answer some of the concern and questions for Councillor Dunnell.
Yes, Councillor, thank you for the question. We've actually found that the seniors prefer the apartment living, stacked townhouses are stair-driven, and so forth, so it's not really conducive. We also have a large amenity program, rooftop patios and stuff, so that they do feel that they're connected in some way, and there's lots of open space. So we our program is always a high level of common area for that concern.
Councillor Scott Davey asked about the plans for parking, which includes 1.15 parking spaces per dwelling unit. The developers noted this includes parking for the commercial space on site. Here is their brief exchange.
So on the parking that was first raised by Councillor Michaud, I have noticed there is, you have more than one unit per housing unit, which is quite a lot. So I'm just curious, is that something that you guys want to do, or is there push on our staff side? Just curious your thoughts on that.
So councillors, so it's 1.15 spaces per unit, but there's almost 200,000 or 20,000 square meters, 200,000 square feet of employment uses as well, which is shared parking overall. So it is a blended rate I'm using to present to you, but Jamie, is today's market, we're a driving community. Notwithstanding that this development ultimately will create over 4,000 riders per day on the LRT, you can imagine that will progress over time. So vehicle use will decline and ridership at the LRT will increase. So the sweet spot, I would say, in the marketplace, based on Jamie's experience in building 20,000 multi-residential units over the generation of a family, is that parking rate that is proposed. But it is anticipated that it will decline in time.
Davey then mentioned the no height limit on parts of the property and asks the developers if they are planning on exceeding the 38-story building, which is now the highest at the site. As Jamie Critch approaches the microphone and Chris Pigeon steps away, Pigeon, with a smile on his face, whispers, "Not today." It is tough to hear on the recording, but it is amplified here, and it is quite obvious when looking at the video as well. Here is the audio of that exchange, which ends with Davey suggesting they would be open to making the buildings higher, which staff later agreed would be allowed, based on current bylaws.
In this location, I believe I heard Stell, and I'll follow up with staff as well, but I heard them say that in certain locations there isn't a height limit on the buildings, but I do notice it's mentioned at 38 stories here. Are you interested in potentially going higher and increasing density on this location?
Yeah, well, we worked with staff quite feverishly to come up with that, and they really wanted to see the skyline the way it is, and we were quite content with how we worked through that process.
Okay, well, I'll just say then, pay attention to some of the questions of staff, because if there is interest in that going forward, I think that's something that we can consider as well.
Mayor Barry Verbanovic then asks about adding deeply affordable housing to the development if the buildings were to be higher. Staff responded saying this proposal is doing a lot already, but suggested that they could ask the developer if they would add in more affordable housing if they were allowed to build higher. Here is that audio exchange.
Further to that last question, if we were to look at that and consider it, is there then the opportunity to also have some dialogue and mechanism to perhaps look at some additional affordable housing, but particularly look at the possibility of incorporating some deeply affordable housing in the overall development? Because I think part of what we want to do is quite frankly, build, if we're going to do that, build mixed-use communities that recognize that there's a whole range of socioeconomic individuals in any of our communities.
Through you, Mr. Chair, and to the Mayor, I appreciate the comments and I understand where you're coming from. This proposal has been a balance of many things over the several years, and this is one where we're seeing the most amount of three-bedroom units, the most amount of affordable housing, one of the largest contributions to an affordable housing provider, fairly significant density, quite a few towers, a park that is being dedicated to the city through a developer-build agreement, as well as a publicly accessible pop space. I'm inclined to suggest that I think we've worked pretty hard at getting a really good balance here. Why don't we take it away with a developer and see if within their proforma, if there was additional height, if that could result in a more affordable housing unit. If I have it correct, that's the intent here.
Well, I can't speak for Councillor Davies. Certainly, if I was to entertain it, I guess I'd be interested in looking at what that would look like. But in particular, if there's some opportunity to incorporate some deeply affordable. So, maybe it's some smaller senior units that are deeply affordable, or something like that. That could become part of that neighborhood.
Council will hear further delegations on their meeting on June 26th and may decide on the project at that time. Next up, United Healthcare protest outside St. Mary's General Hospital. A demonstration is planned at St. Mary's General Hospital in Kitchener on Monday, June 26th, demanding more support for healthcare workers and an end to the efforts to privatize public healthcare in Ontario. The protest, which starts at 11 a.m., is aimed at the CEO of the hospital and the Ontario government, as the government continues privatization of the public healthcare system while accelerating its decades-long underfunding. The demonstration is organized by the Ontario Nurses Association, Unifor, the Canadian Union of Public Employees, the Ontario Public Service Employees Union, and the Service Employees International Union, alongside local labor activists, and is one in a series of recent demonstrations aimed at, quote, protecting the public healthcare system from privatization and to improve working conditions and wages of all healthcare workers, unquote. Recent data shows that in Quebec, private surgeries cost 2 times more than public ones, and that in Canada, hospitals are paying up to 8 times more for nurses from private firms. To help put the pressure to privatize the Ontario healthcare system in a historical context, consider former Conservative Premier from the 1990s, Mike Harris, a proponent of neoliberal privatization of public services, sits on the board of Chartwell, a private, for-profit, long-term care service provider, while his wife Laura owns a nurse-for-hire service. They are both personally profiting from the increasing privatization of the public healthcare system. Ahead of the demonstration, we spoke with Jim Stewart, the co-chair of the Waterloo Region Health Coalition, a node in a network of organizations working at, quote, protecting public health care for all, unquote. Here's what Jim Stewart had to say. Now, why are all these groups coming together, Jim? What are the risks and impacts of privatization?
Well, fundamentally, the biggest risk, and actually it's not even a risk, it's a certainty, is that when we transfer 50% of all of our surgeries permanently to profit-driven private clinics, we're not just transferring all of those surgical procedures, but we're also transferring all the funds that go along with them. So our hospitals, our public hospitals, the hospitals that we have built and paid for, donated to, and volunteered in for 100 years, will be decimated. This is devastating to our public hospitals because that's not just the procedural fees for each surgery or each diagnostic like MRI and CT, but it's also the facility fees that will be transferred out. And then, of course, that'll be followed on by the transfer of staff. All of our medical technologists and nurses, et cetera, will be leaving hospitals too. And furthermore, The surgeries that are going to be transferred are the lightweight surgeries. So we're going to leave our public hospitals with the most acute, most complex cases with less money and less staff to deal with it. It's not a good idea. This is not an add-on. This is really a huge takeaway from our public hospital services.
Why is Ford pushing towards privatization? Are there any benefits to this?
No, there are no benefits. It's going to cost the system, the government, more money to do this because to do the exact same procedure in a profit-driven private clinic, the government will pay more. There's a premium for having it done in a private clinic, which is ironic because we've got excess capacity in our hospitals. It just needs to be funded. So there's no reason to be building a second tier of ORs all across the province when we have capacity existing for over 100,000 surgeries in our ORs right now. And to give you an example of that, at Grand River Hospital, there's 10 operating rooms, but only 7 are used. At St. Mary's, there's 8, but only 6 are being used. And they're only being used Monday to Friday from, say, 8 to 3 or 9 to 4. Instances. So, just doing another couple of hours of using our existing ORs with competent people and all the infrastructure and technology available makes far more sense than building a whole bunch of private clinics.
Mm-hmm. So the groups involved, including the Ontario Nurses Association, Ontario Public Service Employees Union, QP, the SEIU as well, why are all these groups coming together at St. Mary's on Monday?
Well, it's not just those workers and those union groups, but it's also all the people, the citizens of the Waterloo region. And, you know, as evidenced by our participation, the Health Coalition is made up of volunteers who want to support and protect our public health care system. And the reason why we're doing it and everyone's involved in this is because, again, we're looking at the dismantling of our public hospital services. And people did not vote for that. And people do not want that. Our referendum on in May 26th and 27th clearly showed that by an overwhelming majority of 98% against privatization. So, you know, we have to send the message to Mr. Ford that he can't just be listening to all of the lobbyists for healthcare corporations and insurance companies and American think tanks.
Hmm. All right. Anything left to say about Monday's event specifically?
I would just like to have everybody who supports public health care come out to St. Mary's Hospital and help us to demonstrate and send an even stronger message to Queen's Park.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for the time today, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
CKMS News will have follow-up from the protest and a longer interview with Jim Stewart of the Waterloo Region Health Coalition in the next few days. And finally, changes on the way to development bylaws in response to new provincial legislation. In response to the Ontario government's legislative changes with Bill 13, Bill 109, and Bill 23 regarding housing developments, Kitchener City Council will be making changes to their bylaws and procedures around approval processes. Staff presented a report with recommendations to adopt to meet the new legislation. While there are many points we want to discuss in the proposed bylaw changes, today I will focus on the decision by Council to accept the staff recommendation to remove in-person community meetings relating to new developments, and instead having digital-only consultations. Councillor Chapman pushed back against the recommendation, suggesting hybrid meetings. But between Councillor Davey arguing the limits of accessibility and the openness to meet with residents one-on-one, and staff responses saying their capacity is stretched, Chapman's arguments failed to persuade her colleagues. Chapman was unable to move a motion to amend the recommendations to implement hybrid meetings in place of digital only, and the vote to accept the report as written carried. Here are some of the highlights from that discussion.
And finally, on Appendix F, I'm wondering if we could, to ensure equity and inclusion, it refers to digital meetings being only digital for public consultation on these topics. And I was wondering if we could change the wording to a hybrid neighborhood meetings rather than digital meetings. So that would give flexibility to do both. People could be in person, people could be online, but as we know, not everybody has access to the internet. So I just think, you know, we put a lot of thought and energy into equity, diversity, and inclusion, and yet the way we're doing neighborhood information meetings, people are being excluded. So all I'm asking is that we change that word to hybrid rather than leaving it just as digital.
Through you, Mr. Chair. So the notion of a primary meeting being digital was intentional. As a result of the pandemic, we did pivot all of our neighborhood information meetings for site-specific development applications to the Zoom platform. We have monitored our attendance levels over the last few years, and the attendance level is it's similar. We haven't seen a drop off. The benefit to a Zoom meeting and digital is that staff can attend those meetings in the evening when residents are able to attend from their homes. We're able to greatly reduce the amount of resourcing and costs and room bookings and all of the time implications that go into booking an in-person meeting. We have found that with a digital meeting, we are able to have a development application for, we're able to have a neighborhood meeting for every single development application. And I know some members of council have come and there's only been one or two people there, but that's a service that we're happy to provide, even if it means we're only spending 15 minutes online answering questions for folks who did attend. There is an advantage to having the digital meetings. We're able to record them and put them online and people are able to watch them after. They're also able to call in. We know that there will be some site-specific development applications where maybe a supplementary meeting on site is warranted, maybe that there's additional in-person that work needs to be done, but our recommendation is to continue to have a neighborhood meeting for every single development application, that the default be a digital meeting.
And I appreciate that, and I've heard that being said many times. I'm just trying to push the importance of inclusivity and equity. Just in where I live, within half a block, I've got three people that do not have internet and that are well engaged in what goes on in the neighborhood, right? So I think we're making a mistake by not changing this to hybrid, because you can still record a hybrid meeting. There's still, you know, information that will be available to the residents that do want to do it digitally or do want to do it in person. So I would request that we vote on this particular item separate.
Councillor Davey.
And a recorded vote, please.
Yes, sir. Just I want to comment on that alone. I've said that enough, but I won't be supporting that amendment. And my rationale is, at some point, we have to be cognizant of staff's time. We're already hearing how busy staff are, our planning staff, and their ability to process all of the many, many things we keep throwing at them. This is a situation where I understand the inclusionary rationale behind it, but the reality is if there are residents that do not have a way of coming in on Zoom and they don't have a family member who they can go to their home and use Zoom, or even a cell phone where Zoom works, and they can't even phone in for some reason or another, then I don't know about anyone else's experience, but anytime a member of the community has wanted to meet with me or staff privately, they've made themselves available. So I think we've covered every possible backstop, so I won't be supporting the amendment.
You have been listening to the CKMS headlines for Monday, June 25th, 2023, on 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo. This is Dan Keller, and thank you for tuning in. This program is part of the Local Journalism Initiative and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, Heritage Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. Check out the archived versions of this program on radiowaterloo.ca/news and listen to all the LJI content at canada-info.ca. If you want to get in touch with comments or ideas about stories to cover, email us at news@radiowaterloo.ca.